Perfect. Here we are, man. My man Anthony. We finally get to do this, dude. How you doing?
Yes. I'm doing good, man. How's everything been on your side?
Everything's good, man. I'm pumped to get you on the pod finally. You and I you're one of the very few people I got to meet in real life because you live close by, and it's always nice to be able to do that with people that you connect with online and stuff like that, man. So I appreciate you coming on and jamming with me.
Of course, man. Let's jump into it. I'm excited to get into it and see what we can uncover. So let's jump into it.
There we go. First and foremost, congrats on the twins. I know you're in full on dad mode. How's that going? That's the most important part, man.
That's something that I kind of have to remind myself of too. It's so easy to get caught up in what we're doing every single day that you have to constantly remind yourself, kind of like a mantra. You have to constantly remind yourself and refocus your mind. This is what I'm doing all of this for. Man, it has been a challenge. It's been challenging. I feel like not enough people talk about that aspect. But it's been, transition. It's been letting go of who you used to be. It's
that's such an important concept right there, dude. That's very hard. That's like the hardest thing to do.
It is, bro. It is, especially because I'm an only child. So, having to let go of your selfish desires and focus on other people is, it's really, really important. It's something you have to do as a parent, especially if you own a business and are a parent.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Dude, it's crazy. So how old are your babies now?
11 months.
Whew,
11 months.
Man,
yeah,
coming up on a year already?
February 16th, bro. It's been like everyone tells you it goes by so fast and it seems so contrite to say. But when you're in it, you kind of sit back in your chair and you're like, literally, where did the time go? Like my babies were born premature. So they're 4 pounds, 7 and 4 pounds, 13 ounces. And now they're... coming up on 25, 35 pounds. And it's just crazy how fast it changes. And it also kind of reminds you to be present. Don't take any of it for granted. Like, that's one thing that I wish I could tell myself going back to that I've heard some people say of, like, when they're crying, when you're frustrated, all of those things, love it. Love all of it, because it's going to go by like this. And you're going to look at the pictures and tear up because you're like, what happened to my tiny, tiny little babies? It's hard to keep that grasp of though in the moment when they're crying and you're frustrated with work and all of those things. It's so hard to do, but it's so important. So important.
Dude. And I think there's this underlying thing, and I don't have kids, but I've had dogs, and there's always this like partnership thing. And like, I'm sure you and your partner realize this. It's like, now it's like a time to be a team even more than you were a team before. It's crazy.
100%. And me and my partner have actually worked too. And we've like, just from the beginning, we've worked on this, but really trying to foster communication, really trying, because the fact that you guys are going to argue is going to happen. It's not a question. It's, you're going to argue 100%. What are you going to argue about? Who's going to concede? Who's going to go, look, that's fine. We're just going to agree to disagree for now and then circle back on this later. Like, you just, that has been one of the most pivotal things for us too, because we don't argue a lot and we're very lucky, but we're also pretty new to our relationship. Our relationship is only about two and a half years. So, understanding that, look, when you're 10, 20 years into it, it's a different game. So learning how do we argue and kind of being able to pause in that dynamic of, I'm feeling frustrated. Why? If I feel comfortable enough and free enough to ask, hey, I'm feeling upset, can we talk? Or, hey, should we put a pause on this, talk about it later? Learning what works for your guys' individual styles is something that I feel like if you don't do, trouble.
Yeah, trouble. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like,
learning how to argue.
I think my fiance and I always go back to this through anything that we like going through. It's always like, the one thing that we have going that is ends up being the solution to everything is communication. And I feel like if you can't properly communicate and everything turns into an argument, I think just that layer of what you just said there, the acceptance of like just knowing these things are going to happen is already like you're already 5 steps ahead of the game. When people resist that acceptance, that's where I think a lot of that falls through is – you don't give yourself that room to understand that these things. It's just like when people say, like, the only thing you can't control anything, but the one thing that we're all sure of is that we're all going to die one day. Like, that is one thing. If you can accept that, you live a much better life. But if you're sitting here in fear and you're like, oh, I'm going to die, it's like, dude, it's going to happen. Like, just understand that that life is going to happen. And so it's crazy, dude. I think communication is one of these underrated concepts of everything, whether it's relationship, business, whatever else it is. It's just eliminate so much frustration and bullshit when you just talk about it and just straight up just say it, like, hey, this is what I'm feeling right now. It might not be the right thing, but this is what I'm feeling. And it's just like, oh okay, I didn't even think about that one.
No, hold on, we have to go back to that what you just said. What you just said is so important. I might not be correct. I use that phrase. I'm so glad you said that. I use that with my team. I use that with my partners. I use that with my family. I use this with my dad a few months ago. Can you still hear me?
You froze for a little bit. You said you froze for a little bit. You said just understanding that you're not going to be correct.
Bro, that's so important what you just said, because like, you have to learn. This is how I'm feeling. Thoughts, feelings are not always right. They're not always correct.
Yeah. They're there. They're just there.
100%. Like, learning that I might not be correct. This is how I feel. I used this with one of my designers not too long ago. I used it with my dad a few months back. I was like, hey, we got into a little bit of a kerfuffle. And he was like, hey, you know, we got into a little argument. And I had to sit down with him and go, look, here's how I feel about the situation. I felt like you did this. I feel like this happened. Not that that's right, but that's how I feel. And I feel like when you do that, when you have that disarming portion of that, it gives them the freedom to go, okay, I get where you're coming from, because you kind of you brought it up and you let all of the air out of it, because then you go, this is just how I'm feeling. Not that it's correct, but it's how I feel. That's such a powerful way to handle any communication, again, between relationships, interpersonal, at work. It is a huge hack to be able to deflate and disarm someone who, because it's natural, right? You get defensive, you get when someone's coming at you, and even if you just feel like they're coming at you a little bit too angry or whatever the case is, that little bit of disarming is so powerful in managing that situation.
It's crazy. And I think, you and I both work with like clients and different things. And how many times do you fuck up and you're just like, man, like, I wish I didn't. And you just tell them like, hey, I fucked up, like straight up, I fucked up. This wasn't done right or whatever else it is. 9.9% of the time out of 10, they're going to be like, oh dude, it's cool. Like, just fix it, take care of it. You already like accepted the fact that you messed up on something. It keeps that relationship going. And I don't think, truthfully speaking, through all the clients that we went through at my agency before we shut things down, I don't think there was one situation where I said that to somebody and somebody's like, you're fucking fired, or I'm going to leave, I'm not working with you anymore. It's always like, hey, I appreciate that. Like, the response that you get, you almost feel this, like you said, that release. It's like a release 100. Valve. You're just like, oh, yes. I let everything out there, and whatever happens from here on out, I'm cool with it. I already accepted the fact that this can go the wrong way.
Can I tell you a somewhat embarrassing story about something that happened with a client a few months ago, about a year ago? I was working with a client, and they're, first of all, I found them on Upwork, right? So I've reached out and found that it was this big 8-figure brand that I've actually bought from. I knew who they were, and went through a process. We're onboarded. We're getting moving, right? It was just me at this time. I didn't have the team that I have. This has happened pretty quick. So, it was just me doing everything. We sent out a plain text email that was, just saying, hey, from the founder. It's really personal. And instead of the dynamic property, I was moving too fast. And I just left my name in the email. So it went out to everyone with my name, and it was supposed to say their name. I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed. But luckily there is, it only dripped out to a few percentage of people. We were able to fix it. But I came to the table and I said, look, here's what happened. I forget exactly the structure that I used, but it's like, here's what happened. Here's, I apologize. This is 100% on me. Here's the remedy. Here's what we're going to do. We canceled the email. We're going to, fix it. We're going to send the right people, whatever. And here's what we're going to do now to prevent that. In our systems, we're now adding a new layer of QA to make sure that, this happens, this happens. Now that we have a team, those things don't happen. But when it was just me and you're a freelancer, those things happen all the time. So, but from that, they've been with me ever since. I mean, we think we've been together for almost a year now. like been working with them for almost a year now. So it's like the ability to just come to the table, say, look, I take full accountability. I'm so sorry. Even if the other party had something to do with it, I take full accountability. I'm so sorry for the part that I played in this. And here's what we're going to do to fix it. It can make or break a relationship, especially with a client who's paying you $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month. I mean, it's a huge
remedy. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And I think that shows, in the age of like AI and all the shit going on nowadays, that is the human level of things that you can always count on, like people accepting, is the fact that you can just reach out to them. Hey, this is what happened. Here's the layout, like full transparency. It's not going to happen again due to these reasons. That's beautiful, man. I know people I've worked with just on the other side, right? Like I get hired, I've hired people too. And it's the same thing. When somebody comes to me as, you know, as their client and says, hey man, like completely dropped the ball on this. Like I'm just not, you know, I wasn't in the right state of mind. I was doing too many things, whatever that reasoning is, it doesn't matter. I had a family thing come up and I completely forgot to send this out or do this or whatever it might be. It's like, oh, dude, it's all good. Just next time, communicate it a little bit earlier and not wait till the deadline, but it's all good. No hard feelings. Let's keep it moving.
So powerful.
And I think that's the best way to learn and keep the ship moving forward. So I really, 100%. Really appreciate that. Yeah, it's crazy. 100%. But, tell me a little bit, how's the work-life balance been in terms of, you know, the kids and running a business and growing a business, more importantly, you know, how's that all been? And, you know, what have been some of the tough points there? Because I know that's probably not the easiest thing to handle.
It's been increasingly harder, especially as they've gotten older. Now that you see, if you look to my left, you'll see these grubby little fingerprints on the windows. They're starting to walk and starting to shuffle along the couch and starting to have voices and talk now. Work-life balance. Work-life balance has been intentional. Just to give you some background too, when we initially talked and I found you and we connected and connected a few times since, I was at a co-working space up in Roseville and I kind of started everything there. And that was kind of the hub of operations. When my girlfriend said she was going to leave work on a maternity leave, I decided, okay, it's time to probably come home, be here for a few months. One, I'd save some money, which is always a good thing when you're expecting twins. But then I was like, okay, cool. Then I could also help her with a few things. I would cut a lot of time out of my day. I mean, I was spending 30, 45 minutes there and then 30, 45 minutes back in travel time. So that would just save time, all of those things. And it felt like a win-win. So I came back home. The one thing I was aware of is it's going to be hard to balance, right? It's going to be hard. My couch is 10 feet that way, or my bed is 10 feet that way. My couch is right here. It's going to be hard to have that discipline because when your couch is right there and your bed is over there. It's so easy, but you know, luckily everything's gone really well. This, you know, working from home has been a hack. As long as you can have the discipline to actually create your day, schedule your day, I've taken a few programs and talked to a few people about, you know, how to properly structure your day and time blocking. If you can do that effectively, working from home, especially with kids, can be a hack, especially young kids. My kids, when they were, you know, when they're only a few months old, they sleep all the time. You know, I'd wake up. So just to give you some context too, for anyone who maybe is expecting kids or, you know, wants to have kids, but has a business, aren't sure how to balance it. There is always this saying that I hated that a lot of really successful people said, which is there's no such thing as balance. And I hate that. I hate that sentence because you have to. If you don't see your kids, your life will go to shambles, or their life will go to shambles and yours will prosper. And it's not a good recipe for success. But balance is a bad word for it. It's intentionality. It's going back to what I said before. It's like you have to be very intentional with your time and you have to work very, very hard. for example, when they were just a few months old, my girlfriend would be up with them all night. We had a schedule. We had a routine. She would be up with them from 12 to 5 or 12 to 4, whatever it is. When I woke up, anywhere between 3:30 and 5 o'clock, I would wake the kids up. I would take them out here. I'd feed them. I'd swaddle them, put them down. And then once they're taken care of and they're good to go, stay up with them for a little bit. She would wake up and you know, make sure they're okay and take care of them from there. I would start work anywhere between 6 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock. It takes you, going back to what we were saying before, it takes you letting go of the things that you want to do. I just want to wake up slow. I just want to get up and watch TV. Just a little bit of TV when I wake up. I just want to, you can't. So you have to understand what are your priorities. And from there, structure your day accordingly, right? So I would work the kids into my schedule, as weird as that sounds, and say, look, this is going to be time for here. This is going to be time for here. Because I'm very naturally very unorganized. I'm naturally very scatterbrained. I'm naturally very lazy, very lazy. So I have to structure my day that way to make sure that I'm intentional. Otherwise, I just go off the rails.
So, you know, they say that the true definition of discipline is doing things you don't want to do or the things you're lazy with. And so when you have that, when you have discipline, you can tackle all the lazy factors in your life. Like that's I think what I'm hearing is that you kind of had to kick things into more of a understandable routine that worked for you, that kind of takes time to work on a daily basis. Like sometimes it's an hour earlier, sometimes it's an hour later, but that routine is there. Got to get this done. Got to take care of the kids. Got to do this.
Yes. You're exactly right. That was kind of the main thing for me. I was like, look, I don't care what time I have to go to bed. I don't care what time I have to wake up. And that's why, like when I'll post, I don't know if you do follow me on Instagram. I'll post stories this morning. I posted a story. I was up by 3:30. I'm up running by 4:30. If people go, is that like, I've gotten messages. Is that necessary? Like, do you have to do that to want this and that? And like, no, absolutely not. Yeah. You just have to know what does your day look like? Do you have enough time at the end of the day? Move it then. Like, you don't need to wake up early. You don't need to be a night owl. You need to do what works for you. Right.
Exactly.
So my goal was 12 hours minimum. I need 12 hours of true work time to be where I am. Cause I know my day. And honestly, I probably need a little more, but that's the minimum to get done. The things that I want to do to grow the business. Everything else, where do I plug these pieces in? Where do I plug kids in?
Right.
Where do I plug self time, which has been less lately? And you have to learn to also use the times, like when I go for a run or when you go to the gym, that's also you time. I know sometimes we want to relax and we think of that as me time, me reading a book, but no, you have to make you time whatever time you possibly can. So kind of going back.
What does you time for you look like? What is that? Do you go to the gym? Is it working out? Is it running? Is it something like exercise related, or is it
running right now? When the kids were born, I just did not have time to run the business, take care of them, be a good boyfriend and still have time for myself. I just didn't. And maybe I wasn't working hard enough. Maybe I should have been working 19 hours like Elon Musk. I couldn't. It wasn't me, right? I wasn't there yet.
Right.
But, you know, I started to use running as my me time because I couldn't make it to the gym. You know, 30 minutes or, you know, 15 minutes to get dressed, 20 minutes to drive to the gym, an hour, hour and a half to work out, 20 minutes back, come and change. It's a 3-hour routine. If you're fast, hour and a half, 2 hours, like a good, true workout. So I just didn't have the time. And then also I was looking into some research that said running is actually really good first thing in the morning for brain health, for neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, cool. Double whammy. I get to get all my calories burned in this 20, 30, 45 minute window flat and still have time for myself. So that was kind of the thought behind it. So lately it's been running. I still, unfortunately, and this is something I'm still working on. I still enjoy just vegging out on the couch when I have just an hour.
Yeah.
I love just, it's hell almost like a meditation at some points, right? Yep. When you're so exhausted, when you've had a, 75, 80 hour work week, just vegging out on the couch. And that's still one of the things that I enjoy, but I'm working on kind of getting that out because it's just not productive, right? If you can do something that's actually productive and not that you have to work, right? But I mean like productive as in like maybe me and my girlfriend go out for dinner. Maybe we sit here and play Scrabble while the kids are asleep, right? Learning to be as productive with every hour is kind of the goal for this year for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that, man. Mm-hmm. I love that you've managed to be aware of that and shift it around as you need it and make it work for you. Cause it is tough, man. Even I'd say even without kids, when you're at home, a lot of people fall off and they're just like, oh, I can go and hang out with friends or do this or do that. And there's this whole thing, you know, it's like, oh, let me go grab a drink and sit around for 3 hours. Like, dude, you wish you can get those 3 hours back and put it into your day. Now you'd be flying high.
Bro. I look at my days before this when I thought I was working hard. I was working at 8 to 5 and I'd work out for an hour afterwards because my old job had a gym attached. And I look at my day and I'm like, oh my God, I wasn't waking up until 6:30, 7 o'clock. I was wasting so much time, but you don't think about those things when you're going through it.
Yeah.
man, but if people just audited their day, slept just a little bit less, if they have goals and something they want to achieve, if they could audit their day and kind of build their day out, you would realize, oh, there's actually a lot of little holes in my day where nothing's really going. It's pretty crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing, dude. And I think there's a lot of layers to that in terms of getting to the point where you understand that. But tell me a little bit about a kind of the, you know, you and I have talked a lot about just agency stuff and all this. Like what was your kind of your beginnings to get to this place where you are now? What was the kind of first place? Did you work at an agency? Did you run your own brand? Like, give me a little bit of backstory about, you know, and keep it as long or short as you want. There's no time restrictions, but I just love to know your little bit of your journey on getting to where you are now.
Yeah, let's start when I learned what the word advertising was, I guess. So to give some background, I run a retention marketing agency, and we help brands. You know, we range anywhere from as low as $100,000 a month to up to $5 million a month for one of our bigger clients. We help them with email, SMS, you know, any e-commerce brand in that range, email, SMS, mobile app pushes through things like TapCard and mobile apps. And starting back to when I learned what the word advertising was, it was 5 or 6 years ago. So not too long ago, but, me and a friend of mine, you know, we saw some Ty Lopez course or something, and said that you can make money online. And we're, of course, you know, young and intrigued. We tried it and we got some good momentum. We got one of our clients, actually, you might've heard of them locally. They're called DexaFit. It was, it's a body composition scanning company. Guys down there are incredible. They were in, over in Folsom. Now they're downtown. But we got them and we had some really good momentum. We just didn't know how to operate a business to save our lives. We were, we just couldn't figure out how to run the business and, you know, managing everything and invoicing and making sure we're getting the results and staying focused. It's hard to do. So we started there and it just kind of slowly crumbled. You know, we just didn't know how to run. Yeah. It was heartbreaking. From there, once we kind of split, the guy who started, his name was Abe, we split, did our own thing. I was unsure of where to go. I didn't know what to do. You know, that was my first and only thing I'd ever worked on. That was not a regular job. So looking at my skill set and going, what do I need to improve on? I sucked at sales. I was terrible. At sales. I still am. Yeah. I'm terrible at sales. So I looked at my skill set and I was like, okay, where do I need to improve? Gary Vaynerchuk talks about doubling down on what works. And that's effective sometimes, but sometimes you also need to figure out where you suck and figure out how to make yourself incrementally better there. So I worked at Roseville Toyota car dealership, went up there and worked there for a few months, just trying to perfect my skills and, you know, was there, tried to learn tricks of the trade and tried to make a few deals and sold a few cars, but nothing incredible. I wasn't incredible at it. From there, I was like, I hate this. I hate this. Sales sucks, dude. Especially, I mean, they're one of the largest volume car dealerships, I believe, in Northern California. Yeah. And it was just a lot. They are absolute sharks in you know, good ways and bad ways. So I was doing some research and I was like, hey, you know what? I actually met this guy a while ago who runs an e-commerce brand locally out in Rockland, California. Let me just hit him up and see, hey, like, I loved e-commerce at the time. It was so intriguing. We were doing lead gen at the old agency. So I was intrigued by e-commerce. It seemed like a booming space. And I said, hey, you know, would you let me come help, you know, work on your marketing for free? And he said, yes. So, and just to give some more context as well to the old agency, we're doing lead gen and it was exclusively lead gen for a variety of clients, whether it was real estate, whatever it was. So I had no experience in e-commerce, right? So I go in, I'm just shot in the dark. I said, hey, you know, would you let me work on your brand for free? I want to come in. I want to do your Facebook ads, your email. I want to, you know, like a newbie. Said, I'll help you with everything. Yeah, yeah. Right. So I go in and, or I message him and he said, I'll tell you what, because we had developed some rapport, you know, he kind of liked me and he was a good dude. So he said, tell you what, I'm actually looking for a marketing guy. Come here full time and I'll pay you. Oh, I quit the next week at Roosevelt Toyota. I said, hey, I didn't even put in my 2 weeks. I said, hey, I got to go. Dream job, 7 days. I felt terrible for it. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I got to take this.
Yeah,
And from there, was with him for almost 3 years. And I was there brand out in Rockland selling fitness apparel, and I helped them with everything. You know, we moved from MailChimp to Klaviyo. We got on TapCart and built out a mobile app, was running Facebook, Google, TikTok, Pinterest, Snapchat, you know, copywriting for the website. I mean, it was everything. I was helping develop sales forecasting, collaborating with the operations team, and helping the creative department build ads for social. It was a lot, but I wanted that, right? I was hungry. Yeah. I was like, I want to learn how to do all these things, because also I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I did a little bit of everything, and you know, like, it was just such a wild ride. And you know, like most e-commerce brands during COVID, the big boom that happened, you know, I think it was May or June, that big spike, we got to ride that wave, and it was such a fun ride. And just you know, when everything slowly towards the end of the year started to dip down little by little, it was heartbreaking, but you know, was there for a while, and just found that my niche and what I enjoyed and what I loved was email marketing. It was just such a unique space. I felt like so many people were moving towards paid ads, and that was like the, you know, every newbie was going that direction. And you know, do you know Marty Neuermeyer? I think that's his name. He's a branding expert.
I can't say. Maybe if I saw his like name or his brand or something.
He wrote a few branding books, and one of them is called Zag. And and it kind of stuck with me, like just that concept of thinking about, if everyone's going left, go right. Yeah. Left might be where the money is, but if you go right, and you know, all the things align, right? There's a good market there, and you're good at what you do. You can carve out your own path. Now, 100%. Granted, since then, you know, there didn't realize there was a ton of people already in the game, and a ton of people have switched since all the changes with iOS 15, but went that direction, and with really one goal, like, how do I be the best? Because there's so many fly-by-night agencies that just do it because they think it's easy, or they do it because they want to make money online. But it's like, how do you become the best at what you do? And I found out it's by working with the best people. If you can work with amazing teams, if you can work with amazing brands, you learn so much so quick. So that's it's kind of the path. That's where we went. It was the agency. It was Toyota. It was the brand. You know, I had a few little things. I tried to start an e-commerce brand that didn't pan out. You know, sometimes learning when to say no is also really important. So I sat down with my partner who I was running the e-commerce brand with, and I was like, this just doesn't make sense. We were making like, you know, a few thousand bucks a year, and we were hopeful. We were like, man, maybe one day this can turn into something. You know, when you look at opportunity cost and think of, man, I have this thing that's actually legitimately growing and bringing me MRR in this thing that's just hope. And especially with kids, like, I got to do what's going to be best for us in the next 12 months, or at least I think. So
that's a tough place to be in, because that's also like that it's circumstantial to the point where you are in your life and what call you have to make. I'm sure that call would have probably looked a little bit different if you didn't have kids, if you didn't have little bit of that pressure from the outside to be like, I need to kind of make a decision for a future based decision, not something that I'm just like want to sit on for. So I completely get that. And I think it's the service business always, and at least for me, I'll speak for myself, is like the service business always for me allowed me to see different opportunities that are out there. Like, it opened my eyes to so many little extensions of like what people are doing and all this. Like, I don't know if you've ever done this, but you go inside of one of your clients, like dashboards or whatever, and then you see the apps that they're using and how much money they're paying, and this little like pocket of opportunity that somebody captured and got into this store that's now generating millions of dollars. And you just look at it and you're like, damn, what are other opportunities from a product perspective or a marketing or email, whatever that might be. What are those additional little things? And you start sort of seeing, and you go into like a subsection of something, and then you start, you know, it might not be newsletter, but it might be like, hey, how do we do sponsorships? Or it might be, how do we like make the call to action better? Like, it could be even just the simplest thing, but I feel like you get to see those opportunities on a much bigger level when you're in the service game. Because if you think about it, if you're in the product side of things, if you're selling a product, you don't really get that behind the scenes from the customer that much. You know what I mean? You don't get to see what other things that they're using or tools or whatever that might be. But in the service side of the business, you kind of get the nuts and bolts, and you're just like, sit back and you're like, oh shit, these people are making.
Yes.
The one thing that opened my eyes, Anthony, is like, to touch on, because you touched on ads, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day too. It's like, you can, and I've seen e-commerce brands, you know, you walk in and the first thing you see is like annual revenue, $3, $4, $5 million. You're like, whoa, selling what? Like, what is this? And then you start to uncover different layers to, and you just realize what it's a, let's say it's a $3 million a year brand. They're spending like 2.5 on ads a year. And I'm just like, whoa. And that to me always, I felt this disconnect because I was always a proponent of, sure, that's okay. Those ads are cool. Those are just little things that come in. But when you focus on the organic, on the content, on, you know, building like a really, any customer that comes in, whether it's through ads or no ads or whatever, it's like that email marketing, that communication that you have with your customer and how you make them feel like they're part of the brand and the content, yes, that you provide them, whether it's on your blog or your newsletter, it doesn't matter. That to me as a consumer has always been the part that brings me back to that brand or gives me a sense of like, hey, like I trust these guys, like they're putting in that work every single day. And I feel like I've seen too many brands where they just go and drop a bag of money off at front of Facebook's door and they're just like, give me all the ads. And then all of a sudden when that faucet turns off, everything just starts coming down really fast because you're just now working on zero profit margin.
They're SOL. I have a few of these in my roster right now, actually.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can say that. One of the clients who I was talking to recently, I won't say any names, but they're losing a considerable amount of money per day.
Yeah.
Considerable amount of money. And I kind of sat on a call and said, hey, what if we just dialed down this six-figure ad spend and, you know, went to this instead? And we kind of did the numbers and we're like, look, if we did that, we'd be unprofitable by even more because we're just making less total margin or less total profit. So they're kind of stuck. We have another brand who is connected to, I'll tell you offline, someone who,
yeah,
brand is connected to someone who previously ran for president.
Okay.
So such a strange way that I met them, but I was talking to them and you look, so we looked at their triple whale and we got access to the triple whale and saw that, wow, they're making this amount and their MER, their media efficiency ratio, like what percentage of their total profit is ad spend across all channels is 100%. They are spent for every dollar they put in, they're getting nothing back. They're just like, or, you know, if they put in $2, they're getting a dollar back. It is the worst situation I've seen someone in. But then you look and you're like, okay, see, that's where marketing becomes interesting. Because then if you're someone who has a holistic understanding of marketing, of e-commerce, of unit economics, you can go into a business and go, why are you doing this? Like, oh, we thought if we did this, then it's like, oh, no. I've seen this a few times. Don't do that. Here's what you should do instead. And I feel like that's a big value add for customers. Like, you know, I came on with them as an email marketing agency and I've actually been helping them with understanding how much they should spend building out like a base level, like prospecting and account structure. It's pretty crazy, bro. Like,
it's crazy.
When you look in the back end, who's really making money and who's not, it's interesting to see a lot of people, a lot of businesses who you love, who are in your inbox, who are in your email, who are, you're seeing their ads. They're struggling. Not profitable.
Struggling. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. It's a crazy way to run a business. And that's one of the things that, you know, listen, I ran an e-commerce, brand, a subscription sock subscription brand, like in 2014, 15 and 16. And I didn't know anything about ads. I didn't know anything about anything. I just created a product and I just did the guerrilla marketing, the hustle, like word of mouth, you know, did that whole thing. And we got to like, I don't know, like 300 plus subscribers at one point, which was, you know, it was really nice. But dude, I had no experience with like inventory and vendors and terms of like all these different things.
MOQs and all the details.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get to this point where you're running and these things are, people are emailing you, hey, I need money for this invoice. I need this. And you're just like, whoa, like it's so easy. It's so easy to just spend all of that money. So I can only imagine when you're a brand at a at a high level where you're pulling in 3 million, but you're spending 3 million, you're not getting to see anything kind of compound from that perspective. It's really tough because I stand on this, that I think the most important part, especially when it comes to, you know, tangible, like physical products, is how much value are you offering and how good is your product at the end of the day? Because I know for myself, anytime I buy something and I'm just like, dude, this is the best quality. Or somebody asks me like, hey, I like that sweater. I right away be the best marketing campaign for that brand. I'm like, dude, you need to go get one of these because of reason X, Y, and Z. And it always comes down to the quality of the brand. Like it always comes down, whether it's like a simple, it could be a simple like notebook. It could be whatever. It's like, why are you writing that? Dude, because of reason X, Y, and Z?
Yes. I even wonder, like, you know, Liquid Death is a huge brand. They've grown. They've had crazy growth. But I even wonder about a company like them, like, even with the best investors, how long is this brand going to last? Like, how long can you ride that wave? You know, do you sell it first? You know, is it going to last? Is it an eternal brand, one that's going to become legacy like Aquafina? You know? You never really know. Yeah,
exactly.
I feel like that's one of the things. If you have another Me Too brand, it's like, oh, well, you can get that from China. I'm just going to copy them, change the marketing, change the branding, and sell it to you a different way. Good luck.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, the e-commerce space is, that's what I, even though I don't run like a service agency in that space anymore, it's been very hard to, because my mind is so deep in it and I've seen so many different aspects of it from the, like I said, the service side, the consulting side, the product side, the customer side, like all of those things. And then you just kind of step back and you're just like, man, I just have so many ways I can help people. Like I've so much under my belt, so much experience, so much depth to like the things that I'm saying. It's not just like you need to do email marketing. It's like, no, here's a reason why, here's how you should, like, starting to people be like, whoa, that was, you know, it's like, dude, this is what happens after 6-7 years of doing this day in and day out and seeing what brands are doing, what they're not. And so to your point, when you go to a brand, even off the, on the off cycle of like, you hired me for this, but I can bring something else to the table and here's a few like bullet points you should consider.
Yeah.
That doesn't come from just a place of like, hey, I need more money. No, this is a value perspective. This is something 100%. That you just need to understand that I've seen it 5 times and 5 out of 5, it fails. So I'm trying to save your ass from failing. And if you don't want to buy into that, or if you don't want to, you know, commit to that, that's okay. I'm just letting you know this is not going to end well. And I think those clients that you build that structure with, that sort of honesty and that sort of transparency, those are the ones that will stick around and they're going to praise you
100%. 100%. And it's also important, kind of in that same vein of like qualifying who you're working with. Like we are not right for everyone. You know, we're not cheap. We're not we're not the most affordable in the space. Mm-hmm. You know, we typically don't work with a solo founder because just they have so much to manage. Unless they give us total creative freedom, it can't be 3 or 4 days we're going without hearing from you. Cause I get it as a solo founder. Like I understand it's hard, but like, you know, learning to qualify those people and understand who we're for and who we're not for. You know, we had a client a few months ago who we just couldn't figure out the tone for them. We just weren't a good fit. You know, our team wasn't a good fit there. So, you know, learning how to qualify and learning like, hey, here's what we bring to the table. What do you think? And that's kind of where I've gone with my business is less sales focused. Like even if you listen to like my sales calls, you start to understand all it is saying, hey, here's who we are. Here's who we're for. Here's what we've done. You know, what are your thoughts based off of that? What do you need? And of course, going into questions, say, where are you at currently? Yeah. And hopefully by this point, we have done most of the qualifying. What are you looking for? What do you need? You know, what are next steps? But once you can qualify and lay that out, I feel like that lays the foundation and also, you know, removes the people who aren't the right fit and a lot of headache. Because you know when you're just starting, you think $2,000 is $2,000. Sometimes $2,000 is $1,000 because you're spending so much time cleaning up all the mistakes and all the incorrect mismatches between you and someone else.
Absolutely, and that's something I hate to say to anybody out there that wants to run an agency. That's the name of the game in the beginning is that you have to feel that friction on your skin. You have to feel that tension and that pressure because it happens more often than not. And then you start to sort of recalibrate at some point where you say, okay, we have enough clients now that we've taken on that we've either not liked working with, they didn't pay us on time, the project turned into something else based on, or something different than what we originally scoped out, whatever mm-hmm. that might be, whatever that friction is, you start to kind of tick those red flags as you're even on the call, your first call, you're like, oh, this person wants everything done yesterday. This is not how they don't understand yes. even the yes. concept of, you know what I mean? So I think it's just it's an overall learning process, and you have to accept the fact that this is something that everybody has to go through every day, because it's very hard saying no when you're just starting a business and you need to get money in your pocket to keep the ball rolling. You know, and it's really, really tough. But man, once you get to that point where that all kind of that clarity comes through, it's epic.
Let me ask you something too.
Yeah.
I have this thought, because when I was early on in the agency, I thought, man, who should we target? Who should our niche be? What should we, but I didn't have any data. I didn't know, mm-hmm. you know, one, where the money was. I didn't know where the good clients were. I didn't know anything. I was so green. I had no idea. When you're brand new in the agency space, do you think that you should niche down? Or do you think that you should go out there, get the bumps, get the bruises, learn from your mistakes, learn who ideal clients are for you or not? What do you think on that? I'm curious.
So I'll give you what I did, and then that might, that can probably like lead me off into a different thought process too. But, initially I started off as a design and development agency. So simply e-commerce is a general stance. When we launched our first website, it was, WordPress, Shopify, and something else. I forget what the other platform was. And I think it's, for me, what at least worked for me, it's like you start with a little bit of a wider funnel of, you know, the services and the platforms you want to support. And I think at some point what ended up happening is that we got enough leads and enough people that were doing one or two things. And this is how we ended up on Shopify, is that people will come to us and they say, hey, I need this, this, and this. And I also want to migrate to Shopify. So I just kind of kept a mental like tally of that Shopify. It's like almost mm-hmm. like a keyword thing, right? Like you just keep hearing this word over and over again. And then I quickly realized the second layer was, okay, how does this make my business better or worse? Makes it better because it's going to be a lot easier to have one particular tech stack that we can work with, and it's a little bit more focused. So for example, like if you're in the email marketing space, maybe it doesn't really matter what platform you're attaching Klaviyo to. Maybe what matters is like the delivery. But for us, development, like coding and stuff like that, it's very hard to hire a wide range of people. Like everybody will tell you, oh, I could figure out Shopify. Oh, I could do this. You know how many people I let into the sphere, and then they just literally after 2 days, they're like, I have no idea what's going on. But their resume, if you just looked at them on paper, you would be like, dude, this guy can build like a rocket probably. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It's just one of these things.
It's so different.
It's so different. It's so different. It's like learning a new language, dude. It's like you're going from, you know, you might be going from like, you know, Spanish to like, you know, like Spanish in Spain, like very like similar, but yes. you still have to learn a different dialect, different way of forming sentences, different this, different that.
Yes. And there are little nuances.
Exactly. Like dialects. It's almost like, hey, in certain countries, there's like five different languages. It's kind of that thing. Like it's one world, it's e-commerce, but what you do in Shopify, you're not doing the same thing in like WordPress. You're not doing the same thing in Magento or whatever else it is. So for me, I would say, to answer your question, I would say it just really depends on what capacity you're working in, because you kind of go down and streamline the process and you say, okay, it's easier for me to now understand the world of Shopify, and I can hire people based on their skill set, what I know they need to know, where it doesn't apply to like other platforms, for example. It doesn't apply to, you know, like the same thing that you do in Shopify doesn't apply to WordPress. There's a whole nother layer of technology and hosting and all these other things that you have to worry about.
Yeah.
Where at Shopify, you literally pay $29, you set up a store, and then you could just start adding components, and it just fucking works. Like it fucking works. And with all these other platforms, like there's, you know, you update one app, it breaks the other and it breaks the other. There's like no quality control. And yes. I almost think about this as like, I literally swear to God, I almost feel like I have a Apple logo tattooed on my fucking chest, because I always think about like how seamless Apple has made the phone versus like all these fucking people on Android that are just like, I have an update for this, and then this doesn't work, and this, and every phone has a different software base. And you're when you're building for Android, you have to consider like 15 different like instances of like how to apply it to, you know, it's just a mess. And to me, I always enjoyed the streamline of like knowing what's ahead. And that means that if something changes on Shopify, that means all of our clients are affected, not just one of them, all of them are affected. So,
but you also know how to handle, you also know how to handle change when it comes. So it makes your life easier. 100%. Yeah.
So to me, I think you're spot on. So to me, I think the circumstances and like the service that you're offering has a lot to do with it. And I think, you know, honestly, I would say we went sort of like, okay, Shopify, design, development, blah, blah, blah. And then as we got into the service kind of layer, then we went from design and development, and then we kind of stretched out back to like marketing and doing a couple other components. And that was only because clients were coming to us and being like, I don't really want to deal with a whole nother agency or manage another person. Like, can you guys even just, even if you go out and hire somebody over the next 2 weeks and you say, hey, this person knows marketing, they can help you with this, this, and this, or any specific things. They wanted one point of contact and one place where they can get everything done. And then in all honesty, I don't think that that was the best move for us. That was us just working based on what other people wanted. And I think that's how we kind of overgrew to the point where, dude, it was like 26 people. And I was just like, whoa, this has gotten like, in my opinion, this has gotten out of hand. I don't think that we should have this many people on payroll. I don't think that we need this much like full-time work. I don't think we need to just be, you know, and you start getting to this bloated place, especially like you said, during like the pandemic, when things were on the uprise, we were just hiring anybody and everybody that wanted to come like just work on cool projects. And man, it was it kind of ended up biting us in the ass later on, which caused me to literally like reevaluate everything that I built, because I was like, I never really wanted a big business like this. I didn't know what I wanted, but I figured it out when it happened that I was like, I don't really want
this. Isn't it?
Yeah, man, exactly.
That's powerful. And I feel like also people don't talk about that. People don't talk about the fact that, sometimes you grow into a space and you go, this isn't what I want. And you don't always know what you want until you have it, but knowing, hey, I think I'm going to exit stage right. Knowing, hey, this is the next best move for me, I feel like is so important. And I love your answer because there's nuance there. Like in your entire answer, there's nuance, right? It's like, well, here's what I did. You know, here are the circumstances, and for every business it's different, because I agree 100%. I feel like every business with anything that anyone says, when they go, this is how you do it, it's like, is it though? Is this how you do it for everything? Like there's nuance in every business, in every situation, every agency. You know, sometimes I feel like you can't always start super new. Sometimes you have to start wide. Sometimes you have to learn from your scratches, learn from your scars, heal yourself. And the most important thing is learn. Like you have to learn and want to progress and go, let me reassess. It was a busy season. Yep. Here's what went wrong. Here's what went right. Here's what, you know, we're going to do next. And start to build, you know, build those roadmaps for yourself, even if they're just mental. And say like, here's, you know, here's some things we identify. These people are terrible. These people are awesome. Let's move this direction. And kind of these small little micro pivots can land you in a really good spot. So I love that answer. Just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. It's really nuanced. It's like, you got to think about it. It's like, you want to plant some vegetables and you have this huge field. You just got to start planting seeds wherever you can and seeing where it grows. Like where things start to like, oh, this is a good piece of dirt right here or fertilizer or whatever else it is. Like you just got to know what ends up being the thing that's like, oh, this is growing at like 10 times the speed. Why are we even wasting resources on this thing that just has us stagnant? It doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. And we tried that with email marketing. We tried that with this, with that. And sometimes it worked, but not enough times as some of the other services. Like when somebody came to us for design and said, hey, I want you to make me a beautiful fucking website. I was like, I feel that fire inside of me. I was like, yes, we're going to fucking crush this. Like you just felt that. But when somebody came with email marketing and you have to go dabble through another agency's shit and see all the things that they did. And then you tell the client, be like, we need to kind of scrap this whole thing, honestly. And they're just like, what? We just paid like $50,000. I was like,
breaks your
heart. I
don't
know what to tell you. Like, you know what I mean? It just sucks. So it was it breaks your heart. Exactly, dude. It's just, you know, I think it's a learning process. And I think I would advise anybody that's getting into the realm of starting a business, I think going the freelance route and testing the waters of service, there's two big wins there. It's like, you get this, like you said, that you got into the e-commerce brand and you just learned this. You get into this place where you're open to so many things that you actually have the opportunity to take time to figure out what like sparks you, like what gives you that little like, whoa, that was, you know, the little spark, that little like straighten out your back. And you're like, oh man, this fucking, when I work on this, my energy's in it. I don't get distracted. I don't get this. Yep. And then there's the shit that just somebody sends to you and you're just like, oh my God, this is the easiest thing, but I don't want to fucking do it. Like, I'm just not going to do this.
And everyone's different too. I feel like that's where it's important to one, know yourself, but also things change as time goes on, to understand yourself, like in the moment, finding those things that light you on fire. Because for everyone it's different. For me, it was email. For some people, it's web. Mm-hmm. For a friend of mine, it's paid ads. It's you know, Google specifically. It's always different, but I feel like you're right. Just like planting those seeds. Some of them are going to rot. Some of them are going to go nowhere. Some of them won't grow. Some of them are going to sprout beautiful, beautiful flowers. Just throwing it out there, being intentional with where you put it, and you know, giving them each enough attention and time to grow, and not just leaving them in the wild. But you know, planting those, being diligent, and then just seeing which one gets you the best end result.
Exactly. And let me ask you really quickly in terms of some of the agency stuff, because I'm always curious. Like, we had a different type of like marketing and like approach to getting clients. Like, where are you at now that you've been running this agency? Like, how are you guys getting new clients? Like, what's that process looks like for you? Are you, you know, doing more like partnerships with other agencies where you say, hey, we can offload this part to us? Or is it more so you just do direct outreach and you say, hey, like, just purchase something on your website. I saw your emails, blah, blah, blah. Here's five ways I can improve it. Let me know if you guys want to work with us. Like, what's your approach?
Man, it's pretty funny because I met you initially pretty early on in my agency journey. And a lot of my success is actually because of our conversations, because some of the things that you told me.
Wow, man. Right? I appreciate that. Thank you.
Dude, and maybe you owe it to the people who you took their programs, right? Ship 30 for 30. You know, you posting the content, posting about Upwork, posting about LinkedIn, posting about Twitter, posting about writing content, even when you're busy, like trying to, you know, do your best to still get it out there. We got 90% of our revenue from 2023 from Upwork. We closed two 8-figure brands, multiple 7-figure brands. And it's been amazing. Like, just really, again, going back to planting your seeds, you have to be intentional with what you do. And the ethos in which we started the business with, be the best, right? How do we become the best? Trying to run that through everything that we do. You know, when we're on Upwork, let's just not just submit a proposal. Let's do some research. Let's figure out how to submit a really good proposal. Let's figure out, you know, what jobs and what things to look for in someone's profile, in a listing. You know, will this indicate success? What is this going to look like for us? You know, looking at all those things. So we're still really getting our sales systems dialed in, because we haven't needed to. Our churn by revenue in 2023 was like 2 or 3% by revenue, which is great. The downside is we spent a lot of time building out the systems, not enough time focused on how do we acquire more sales at scale. So right now we're doing things like optimizing cold email, optimizing our offer, because lately it's just really been building the team, building the systems, because we got to a point where we were, you know, revenue wise, where we can go, okay, cool. Let's, you know, we have a solid team. Let's build out some SOPs. Let's make sure that our hiring process is on point. So that way, once we get to the point where we bring on 1, 2, 3 people a month, you know, have whatever, 10, 20, 40, 50 discovery calls a month, that we're able to grow accordingly. Because one of the things that we wanted to do different, we just saw this churn and burn agency model where people would go from 14,000 to 60,000 a month in 2 to 3 months. But the problem was, one, they didn't know how to run a business. And two, they didn't realize you cannot grow that fast unless you have funding behind you, who can, you know, afford to bring people on, and your SOPs are built out, where you have an effective hiring and interviewing process. Something's going to break, and usually it's client side, because we don't want to break ourselves. You know, as much as we committed to these things, we don't want to break ourselves. So you know, the clients that ends up breaking, we didn't want to do that. We went, how can we grow? What's the word I'm looking for? How can we grow without fucking over our clients? Basically, that was the biggest thing. Like, how do we grow?
Like grow respectfully or something like that. Like
grow responsibly. Grow responsibly. How do we do that? And for us, it was building the team out, building a core team, a small, scrappy group of people who are willing to do what it takes, who, you know, who love what they do, and, you know, build out all the processes on the back end, make sure that everything can get fulfilled without you as the founder. And then from there, then you could focus on sales. So like starting to create this tiered approach to how we do this, and only now mm-hmm. getting to the point where it's like, yeah, now let's focus on, you know, putting content out on Instagram, putting content out on YouTube, writing mm-hmm. more LinkedIn content, like, you know, starting to build this foundation. And that's where we are so far this month is,
I love it.
You know, the first two quarters are going to be focused on that.
I love it. And I want to just touch on something really quickly that you mentioned about the whole writing part of it. What is the importance to you that you've seen since you started posting more and kind of putting your word out there? Because there's, you know, there's a lot of people talking about similar topics, the way they approach yeah. things, whatever else it is. What have you seen, or what has the outcome been for you? I know you said you guys landed some clients and different things, but for you personally, like, sharing that kind of information online and trying to impact the next person and helping them and whatever that might be, like, how has writing online been, you know, why has it become a focus point, and what has it done for you in terms of you personally? And then obviously that translates to business as well.
I love writing. I don't have as much time for it. It's not a revenue generating activity, which now that we have a team, we have to focus on those things. But I love it. I just haven't had the time that I would like to focus on it. But one of the things that it's done is it's given us a voice, and also it's given mm-hmm. us, you know, the ability to find that voice in the sense of, what do you talk about? Right. Do you just spout the same things that everyone spouts? You know, everyone mm-hmm. else talks about on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, or do you try and find some unique characteristic of your business, of you as a person, as a founder, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and how do you, in tying that into the product or service that you offer? Because, you know, maybe that works, and I've seen it work, right? You just post, hey, here are the things that you need to, you know, here are the, and sure, we'll have some of that, but also it's like, how do we incorporate the business character and myself and the team? How do we incorporate that into the business? And I was doing some research and found a few things, like, you know, character diamonds. Right? Have you ever heard of a character diamond?
No.
I forget exactly what it is. It's basically a storytelling structure where it's like, you know, the North Star, whether it's you or the business, it's quirks, it is flaws, it's, you know, it's a few of these components, and it's finding these and it's talking about them. It's like, hey, what are your flaws? The example used was Joe Rogan, right? It's like, yes, he is a commentator, he's a podcaster, but he also has all of these things it's like a polarity. So there's another one, right? So it's like, you know, you claim to be focused on health, but you smoke weed and drink and do mushrooms and psychedelics and all these things, having that polarity, admitting to your flaws. Look, here's, mm-hmm. you know, I did something wrong and here's why. All of these things can really build the character instead of just coming off like another cookie cutter guy who's posting on social. I've really been working on that because that's one of the things that I didn't want to do. And I think to some degree you have to, like, just have some of the stuff that's mass consumerism and that everyone can consume, but tying that all together in a way that's unique, I feel like has been the main focus.
I love that. And what has been your process of capturing those moments and those ideas? So I talk about this a lot, but I'm always one of these people that I always carry like a little notebook, or I have my notes app or something where I just write down ideas. Do you have these moments where you're just sitting there working on something? You're like, oh shit, this is a great thing to talk. Like, I'm in it right now. Oh, I'm feeling it, like that sort of thing. And you're just
I don't know if you talked about this. Do you have ADD or ADHD?
On levels that I can't even tell you.
Perfect. I've never been diagnosed because I don't care to.
I already know. I don't need somebody to tell me that I'm fucking having ADHD.
I Googled the symptoms a few years back and I was like, oh wow, that's me.
Like 10 out of 10.
Yes, literally. So yeah, dude, I don't know about you. I'll just be sitting in bed or sitting on my desk or sitting on the couch, and all of a sudden my brain is just ideas and thoughts are getting thrown around, and then I get something, and I know myself, I will forget. I'm a forgetful person. I'm a father of two now. Yeah. My memory is worse than ever. I have a running list of things that I circle back to. I learned this from someone named Dan Martell. He's a software coach, but he calls it his at agenda list. And I do this for work too. So this is something that, let's say, I'm running through the motions, right? I'm running through my day. I'm getting tasks done. I see there was a mistake. Instead of taking the time to do a loom and call that out, and say, hey, at person, you made this mistake here. What I'll do is I'll do the loom or make a note or a screenshot, and then I'll save it for later. So either once a day or when I have my team calls, I'll kind of pull it up and revisit all those things, and we'll go through them together versus this random meteor shower of things. I do the same thing for myself. So I have a running list of ideas, and I just have one list. And then from there, once a week, I'll kind of go out and shoot it wherever it needs to go, whether that's to a task at work, whether that's to just a personal note or quote for myself, and I'll put it in a Notion doc, but I'll kind of go through it and disperse it so it doesn't get lost. But yeah, I have to. There's so many thoughts, and you'll forget about it so quick.
So quickly, man. And I think for me, a big change has been writing in general, but more so even, taking the time to journal and always having a notepad like in front of me, and always, even honestly, I always say this, like 90% of the shit I write down, I don't even know what it is. I don't ever come back to it. I don't ever reread it. But there's that 10% that is so valuable that I'm like, that right there.
And like, whatever, 9 out of the 10 things you write down, maybe nonsense, right? But there's that one thing that you remember that you go, I'm so glad I remembered that. Let me tell my designer.
That's it.
Forgot. Or it's a thing that you remember and you're out for a run one morning and it hits you like a mantra.
Yeah.
And you, like I posted this morning, I said, something happens to you when you feel like quitting and you don't. And for some reason, I just kept playing in my head on repeat. It's like, those little things that just can be one gem that you need to push you through, to remind you of a task. I feel like it's huge.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's absolutely a game changer for me, in all honesty. But yeah, man, I'm really, really happy. From the time that you and I connected, I think it was on LinkedIn, you had reached out to me and you said like, hey man, like, would love to like pick your brain about agency stuff. I think that's around the time you were probably kind of getting into it. And that was super, super cool to get to be around, people that are close by, because the internet is so large and so far away sometimes that I feel like when you get to connect with people on a human to human basis, it like changes your perspective. And one thing that I've been talking on pretty much on every episode of the podcast that I've been recording so far for this season that I'm putting out is and I feel like you would be such a perfect person to do this with, because you're so close by and we have so many so many similarities in terms of the work we've done and the thought process, and now even fucking ADHD, like everything. Yeah. And I feel like there's a missing piece, especially in the Sacramento area, of this like community of people that you can once a month, even doesn't matter, to simply go grab coffee, sit at a table with 5, 6, 10 people, it doesn't matter, and just kind of throw things at the wall or rent out a little spot where people could just have drinks and food and whatever that might be, and just kind of get these brains in the same room and let that energy like flow. And that community aspect, that real life community aspect, is something I've been yearning for and missing for a very, very long time.
Let's connect. It's one of those things where, when you're in the middle of a business and you're just so overwhelmed and so stressed and so much going on, it's so easy to go, I don't have time for it. I don't.
Yeah.
But it's so important. It's so important because it's what so I've realized, important. If you can make time for those little things that that you know are important, right? There's some things where it's like, look, I'm not going to do that. It's a waste of time. There's little things throughout your day that you're like, I can't focus my energy on that. But when you look at something like that and go, man, if I just get one good idea from this, it was all worth it. If I made one 100%. Connection, if I met one person, if someone gave me an idea that sparked something else that I implemented into my business or implemented into my personal life, it's all worth it. Let's connect more on that and talk about how we can achieve that in Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, just me and you going out for a quick like dinner was just to me was gave me this like boost of energy and this spark to where I'm like, oh yeah, man, like this is what that connect that energy. That's why I when I emailed you about coming on the podcast, mm-hmm. I'm like, whether it's this time or next time, it doesn't matter because this is one of many in my opinion. But like finding a spot, I know there's a few places around here where you can rent out a studio or whatever else it is, like. In person podcast, that energy that you know, there's just different than this like different. Virtual side of things. This works perfectly, don't get me wrong, but then there's this other layer where we can sit there and just kind of let the energy just flow within the same room.
Follow up with me. I actually think I might know of a spot in Roseville that they can rent out podcast space. We'll connect and see when we can make that happen. I'll make sure it's still running and everything's good there, but it could be a dope spot. I think that'd be really fun.
Dope.
Going back a little bit to, do you mind if I give like one closing thought?
Please. Please.
My, excuse me. My dad used to do this embarrassing thing. He's Hispanic. He's, you know, very upfront with things. We'd go into the store and he'd, you know, we'd be about to pay and he would say, "Hey, Miss Cashier, is there any chance that I can get 15% off, 20% off? Like just, you know, mm-hmm. it would be so embarrassing for me." And I go, "Dad, come on, just pay for it." And sometimes 1 out of 10, 5 out of 10, you know, times she would go, "Actually, yeah, if you give us your email, we can give you a certain percentage off." He goes, "Perfect." That was so embarrassing for me for so long. But what I've learned is if you can just ask, just reach out, just make a single move. If someone tells you to fuck off, then they tell you to fuck mm-hmm. off, right? What might happen, because when I sent you that message, I almost didn't send it because I was like, should I even send this? He doesn't even know who I am. This is a random outreach. Just do it because you never know what's going to come. We've went out, what, 2 or 3 different times now, and it's been amazing. Like, I'm so, so glad that we met, and it's all Absolutely. From that. And there's been a few times in my life, and I'm sure in yours, especially in the agency space, where you send one cold email, you send one cold DM, you just do one thing, mm-hmm. and it leads to something great. So if I can give anyone,
that right there, and that layered with like authenticity and just straight up like a human thing where you're not just blasting a bunch of stuff. Like when you sent me that message, I mean, it's very easy because I, not only do I get messages, but I've seen so much shit that like I can automatically flag something and be like, "This is complete crap. This is automated. This is whatever." And it happens, I think, on LinkedIn more than anywhere else. But it's one of these things where I think the approach, even your dad, like what you mentioned about your dad asking for a discount, he didn't approach it in a way, "Hey, give me a fucking discount." He was just like, "Hey, is there an available discount on this?" Whatever.
Word for word.
And the person would be like, "Well, you weren't rude. You weren't an asshole. You asked politely and you asked an honest question. You don't know about our deals. You're not on our email list. You're not on this. Like, hey, sure, we can offer you this. Just give us, you know, an email. Give us something in return." Yep. And I think that's a great way to end this, because I think that's the only way, even on social media, when we talk about writing and different things, people can see the underlying authenticity of whatever you're putting out there. And if you're just regurgitating what the next person is doing, you're not building your thing. You're building their thing. And I think that's the big problem.
100%, you know, putting your own unique spin, making sure it's personalized, making sure there's some remnant of who you are and it doesn't feel automated. You know, even when you're doing cold outreach and things, it can make a world of a difference. You know, it can make you, you know, bring you extra MRR. It can bring you an extra relationship. You just never know. So you just wanted to leave on that
thought. I appreciate I'm so glad you touched on that. I'm so glad you touched on that. That's awesome, man. Hey, tell people where they can find you, where they can find your agency, whatever information you want to drop. Feel free to. I really, really appreciated this conversation, man.
Me too, man. Me too. Yeah. Anywhere on social, email_ant. That's going to be my personal stuff. And then transparentdigital.agency. You can find us there and, you know, look at some of the work that we've done. You can reach out. But those are the main ways to find me. Not super active on social yet. Give me a little bit of time. I'm still working on it. You see a few posts come in little by little. We're working on it, but just looking to you know, get the brand out there, but also just, you know, get the reps in. You know, man, like dude, I wish you could have seen who I was at 17. I mean, my mom was calling my dentist because I was so socially awkward that I couldn't even call my doctors and my dentist, bro. It was so embarrassing. So, you know, just getting those reps in, starting that process of, you know, getting on platforms like this and being more comfortable on camera. It's the direction I'm headed in. You'll see more stuff coming, but email underscore Ant on all platforms, transparentdigital.agency on our website. And that's pretty much it.
I love it. I love it, dude. I appreciate you being here, brother. This was awesome. And we have to connect soon, go grab some food and go shoot the shit for a little bit. Whenever the kids are sleeping, you can sneak out for like an hour or two.
I'll text you as soon as we're off. I'll text you and we'll plan something out for this coming week. All right, Z, I appreciate the time. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Have a good one, man.